Welcome to the Deep Dive. We sort through the noise, the research, the articles to bring you the nuggets that matter. And today, we're tackling something big, something that, well, it keeps a lot of people up at night as they get near retirement. How do you keep your money safe, secure your future, without totally freaking out when the market does its inevitable nosedive? We've touched on this before, right? How an all-stock approach, historically, it's delivered amazing purchasing power. But wow, does it take guts? Real nerves of steel sometimes. Okay, let's unpack this.
Exactly. And it's that emotional side, that fear, that leads to this common advice, the cash cushion or cash bucket. You hear it a lot from advisors. The idea is, you know, it softens the blow, makes those market drops less painful psychologically. So the big question we're diving into today is, does holding, say, 15% cash actually make retirement safer? And crucially, does it reduce that stress enough to be worth potentially missing out on long-term growth? Is the trade-off worth it?
Right. That's the mission. We found this great article that really crunches the numbers. Decades of data, it looks at this exact strategy and uncovers some pretty surprising things. And we're here to pull out the key insights for you. So let's just quickly set the scene. Remember we talked about how a 3% inflation-adjusted withdrawal from an all-stock S&P 500 portfolio, historically, it never ran out of steam, never failed over any 30-year period from 1928 to 2024. Sounds great.
Sounds amazing on paper.
Yeah, but the catch. That strategy demanded, well, an iron stomach. Picture this. You start with $100K. The Great Depression hits. You watch that $100 plummet to around $30K, adjusted for inflation even. That's the kind of psychological pain we're talking about, the stuff that makes you question everything.
Mm-hmm. And that's exactly where the cash cushion comes in as the proposed fix. Advisors often push it for this reason. The thinking, the behavioral idea is pretty simple. You sell stocks when they're up, use that to refill your cash bucket. Then when the market tanks, you spend from the cash. You avoid selling your stocks when they're down low. Makes sense intuitively.
Okay, so how did this analysis test that idea? What data did they use?
They used really solid data. Professor Aswath Damodaran's stuff. Annual S&P 500 total returns, 3-month T-bill returns, that's your super safe cash equivalent, and inflation data, the CPI. All the way back, 1928 to 2024, nearly a century, and they modeled two main portfolios. First, 100% stocks, just the S&P 500. You sell shares in January for your withdrawal. Simple. Second, an 85% stocks, 15% cash portfolio. So 15% in those T-bills at the start of each year.
And there was a specific rule for that 85-15 mix, right, about how you use the cash.
Yeah, a really key rule. You always spend the cash first. That's step one. But here's the clever bit. You only top up that cash bucket back to 15% by skimming stock gains after the stock market hits a new all-time high.
Ah, okay. So you're not forced to sell low just to refill the cash?
Exactly. It's designed to avoid that panic selling or forced selling at the bottom. Then they tested two withdrawal rates. A baseline safe, 3.00% inflation adjusted, and a higher 3.49%. Why that number? Because historically, that was the rate that just about drained the 100% stock portfolio to zero in the worst case.
Pushing
the
limits, basically.
Right. Starting balance $100, all inflation adjusted. And they track two main things. Ending value, you know, what's left after 30 years, generational wealth potential, and the minimum balance you hit during those 30 years. That's their proxy for the stomach churn factor, the psychological pain.
Got it. So first big question then, does holding that 15% cash actually reduce the pain enough? Does it let you safely take out more money? They looked at the maximum withdrawal rate each portfolio could handle before hitting zero for every start year. What did that show?
Well, this is where it gets really interesting. When you plot those maximum safe withdrawal rates over time, the lines for the 100% stock portfolio and the 85-15 portfolio, they practically overlap for most of history.
Really? Almost no difference most of the time?
Very little. In fact, in strong markets, the 100% stock portfolio could actually support slightly higher withdrawals. But okay, in the really tough times, the absolute worst stretches, like 1929.
The big one.
Yeah. The 85-15 mix did come out slightly ahead if you retired right into that crash. The 100% stock portfolio supported 3.49%. The 85-15 mix supported 3.85%.
Okay, so 3.49 versus 3.85. It's more, but it's not a massive leap, is it?
It's about a 10% increase in income for that absolute worst case retiree, which, you know, isn't nothing. And it does feed into that whole debate around the 4% rule. Is it safe? Almost safe. Let's add some data to that.
But hang on, just 0.36 percentage points difference.
3.85, 3.49, and 0.36.
After all the focus on diversification for safety and the worst financial crisis in modern history, the gain is less than 0.5% of additional income. That seems tiny.
It does put it in perspective, doesn't it? Especially when you think about other costs, like Consider a typical financial advisor fee, say 1% a year. In that worst case 1929 scenario, withdrawing 3.85%. That 1% fee is eating up over a quarter of your income. 3.85%
and 26%.
Wow. Now, if you luck out and retire in, say, 1949, a huge bull market start. The safe withdrawal rate was over 12%. That 1% fee feels like nothing then. But that's just luck, pure luck of timing, not skill or strategy.
Right.
And they also looked at the probability of failure, you know, running out of money. Again, the lines for the two portfolios, almost identical, tiny, tiny differences.
So the cash bucket doesn't really move the needle much on preventing failure either.
Not significantly, no.
Okay, this is painting a different picture than I think many people assume. So if the safe withdrawal rate doesn't change much, what about the actual amount of money left over? Let's look at the real dollar outcomes. Stick with that 3% withdrawal rate, the conservative one. Hmm. Starting with 180, 30 years later, adjusted for inflation, what happened?
Right. Looking at the table of outcomes from 1928 to 2024, let's break it down. First, the minimum balance you experienced, the lowest point. Worst case, 1929 start again. 100% stocks hit a low of 31K. The 85-15 mix bottomed out at 44K.
Okay, so $13,000 more cushion in the absolute worst moment. That sounds potentially helpful for peace of mind.
It does cushion it, yes. But look at the median minimum balance across all the 30-year periods. 100% stocks, 90Ks. 8,515. 89Ks? Virtually identical.
So that extra cushion was really only significant in that one extreme outlier case.
Pretty much. And here's the crucial point the source makes. Mm-hmm. Even 44K is still a massive drop from $100. It's more than half your money gone, temporarily. Both are gut-punch declines. You're still watching over half your wealth vanish. The source kind of asks, would you really feel that much better seeing it drop to 44K versus 31K? Both are terrifying.
Yeah, that's a fair point. It's still a huge loss either way. Mm. Maybe the peace of mind isn't quite as peaceful as advertised in those moments. Okay, so that's the lowest point. What about the end point, the ending balance, generational wealth?
This is where the difference becomes really stark. Ending balance after 30 years, 3% withdrawal. Worst case, 100% stocks finish with 83K, 8,515 finish with 99K. Still pretty close in the worst outcome.
Okay.
But the median outcome. 100% stocks ended with $510,000. The 85-15 portfolio, only $400,000.
Whoa, that's over $100 less than the typical scenario.
Exactly. That 15% cash slice trimmed the median ending wealth by about 22%. And look at the best case. Maybe you retired in the early 80s or something. 100% stocks ended with $1.23 million. The 85-15 mix, $830,000.
Wow. $400,000 difference in the best case. So what does this all mean? It seems like the all-stock approach pulled ahead most of the time.
Dramatically so. In about 80% of the historical scenarios, the all-stock portfolio finished with more money. In nearly half the cases, it finished at least $100K higher. And in those best cases, yeah, over $400K higher.
That's not just numbers on a page. Yep. That's potentially life-changing money. An extra nest egg.
It really is. An extra lifetime's worth of nest egg in real inflation-adjusted dollars. When you frame it like that, the 85-15 strategy starts to look like you're trading away potentially massive generational wealth for what feels like a pretty marginal improvement in peace of mind, especially outside that single worst case 1929 scenario.
Okay, let's push it then. What about that higher withdrawal rate, the 3.49%, the one that almost broke the bank for the 100% stock portfolio in the worst case? Does the cash bucket become more valuable under that higher stress?
Okay, at 3.49% withdrawal, looking at the minimum balance again, in that Great Depression scenario, yes, the 85-15 mix did provide a more noticeable cushion. It kept a floor of 32Ks while the 100% stock portfolio basically hit $1. So a real difference there.
Okay, that's significant if you hit that absolute worst time.
It is. But outside of that specific crash, across most other periods, the cash cushion didn't help the minimum balance all that much, even at the higher withdrawal rate. And then ending wealth. Same story, pretty much. The all-stock portfolio pulls ahead again in most starting years, especially beyond the median outcome. The 85-15 mix still lagged significantly, often by $300K to $400 in the best scenarios.
So putting it all together,
yeah.
What's the takeaway here? It sounds like the cash provides a bit of a buffer in the absolute disaster scenario.
Right. A 3.5% drawdown does risk taking a 100% stock portfolio close to zero if you have the terrible luck of retiring in 1929. No question. The 85-15 mix gives you a modest buffer in that specific extreme case, but it gives up really meaningful upside in like 70% plus of the historical period. So put simply, holding 15% cash buys you about 0.35 percentage points more initial income safety before you risk failure. But it still slashes your best-case ending wealth by potentially $300,000, $400,000.
It buys you a little more certainty, maybe, but costs potentially a lot more wealth.
That's a good way to put it, yeah. You trade significant potential wealth for a small increase in worst-case certainty.
Okay, time to really distill this. We've gone through the numbers, the scenarios.
Right.
Let's recap the core trade-offs. What are you really gaining with a 15% cash bucket, according to this analysis?
Uh-huh.
And what are you giving up?
Okay, let's summarize. Gain number one. Does it reduce the depth of the worst drawdowns? Yes. Instead of Netafix 69%, maybe it's only Medikip 57%.
Still requires an iron stomach, though.
Absolutely. You're still watching over half your money evaporate, even temporarily. Both require serious discipline. Gain number two. Does it increase the safe withdrawal rate? Slightly. About 0.35 percentage points from roughly 3.5% to 3.85%, again, mainly relevant for that 1929 style start.
And the cost. What's the opportunity cost?
That's the big one. The median nest egg shrinks by 20-25%. A typical outcome leaves you with significantly less wealth. And the top outcomes. You potentially give up around $400,000 in today's money. So the bottom line really is, it's a behavioral tool, a hedge against your own potential panic. It is not a free lunch.
Growth is the price you pay for that potential behavioral benefit.
Exactly. So let's make this actionable. What can you, listening right now, take away from all this? First, be brutally honest about your risk tolerance. If you know deep down that a 60% drop would make you sell everything, then maybe, just maybe, a modest cash sleeve is the right tool for you to stay invested.
It prevents the catastrophic mistake of selling low.
Right. Second takeaway, rebalance by rule, not emotion. Remember that specific rule they used? Only refilling cash when stocks hit new highs. That discipline seemed key to making the strategy work as well as it did. Don't just refill whenever you feel nervous. Third, test your own assumptions. This was 15% cash. What about 10% or 20%? What about different rules or using bonds instead of cash? Explore what fits your specific needs and comfort level. This isn't one size fits all.
Good point. And taxes and fees.
Don't forget those. T-bill interest is taxed as ordinary income. And as we saw, advisory fees can take a huge bite out of withdrawals, especially when those withdrawal rates are already low in tough markets. Factor that in.
So really, the absolute core message from the source, no matter which pass you choose, 100% stocks or a cash mix, seems to be stick the plan. Discipline is everything.
Absolutely. That's the bedrock.
Okay. So this deep dive, it really seems to show that, looking back at history, if you have that discipline, that ability to ride out the terrifying drops, a 100% stock portfolio delivered more wealth. Often, dramatically more wealth.
Yes, historically, that's what the data indicates. But, and it's a huge but, if you know that facing a 60% paper loss would cause you to panic to hit sell at the absolute worst time, then maybe that small cash cushion isn't about math. Maybe it's the behavioral trick that keeps you in the game, prevents that fatal error.
It really highlights that conflict, doesn't it? The numbers often point one way, pure math. But real life involves real human emotions. And sometimes, managing behavior can lead to a better personal outcome, even if it's not mathematically optimal, if it stops you from making that one big mistake. So it leaves a big question for you to think about. Which kind of safe matters most for your retirement? Is it the mathematical safety? Maximizing the odds of not hitting zero on a spreadsheet? Or is it the behavioral safety, having a setup that gives you the confidence, the peace of mind, to actually stay invested through thick and thin?
Only you can answer that for yourself. Really reflect on it. Dig into your own feelings about risk and what helps you sleep at night.
We really hope this deep dive into the cash bucket strategy has sparked some thoughts, maybe some aha moments, for your own planning and well-being.